Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 130 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, some announcements this week. I could stop and tell you about all of the pictures that are rolling out from the Stars Instagram account and there's the Facebook account, but I'm sure you've all seen them. But it is exciting that there's more production footage being released as we get closer and closer to the premiere date, which is coming up very quickly. I remember, a short few weeks ago, we didn't even have a premiere date. And now we're like, at 30 days.
Look, I swallowed that bitterness. Can we please just go forward and not backwards? Because that was, I was not in a happy place.
Well, you want to go too far forward because you're still already talking about
Voyager read-along. I know.
Yeah, so that would be the first thing. What we've been able to ascertain about things that are going on. What?
I don't know why you think you need to use big words like that.
Maybe because I'm competing with you. No. Good Lord.
Oh, sorry. There's no competing, but I get it.
Oh, I see how it is. You're just saying I could never match you.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Summer. Okay, go on. I interrupted your ascertaining.
Yes. So what we've been able to ascertain from different places online is that...
And different chatter.
And Outlander TV News very succinctly put it all together.
And so look, Sister Sarah, we're just going to call you out and say... We're going to read straight from your post.
Well, no, I can... I'm not going to... No,
Summer,
I can
just don't waste your time.
I can paraphrase.
Just read it. But
basically, all right. So in London, both Katrina and Sam will be doing a Q&A. That'll be on like March 14th. And you can submit a question. There's a link. You can submit a question to the Amazon Prime UK event. Sam will then be going to Sydney, Australia, for a fan event to support Outlander with Soho, which is who airs it there, correct? Soho is the local network there?
Where?
In Australia. Yeah. And then Sam is going to Tokyo March 24th to support Outlander for Hulu Japan and AXN.
That's nice. I'm so glad that people overseas are like getting them, or at least Sam. Can you imagine? I can't, because we've been lucky. We've been crazy fortunate with this little podcast and opportunities that we've had because I bust my balls to do stuff. And sometimes you bust a ball.
I don't even know why we're talking about balls. Literally, anyway, no one in this room has balls.
I know. No, but my point is we've had some pretty incredible opportunities because of just...
Proximity?
Stuff that we spew. The show that we do.
Oh.
Because we've made some really interesting... We made some great relationships and, came in early days before there was a show, as I always say. So, yeah, absolutely. We have had some incredible opportunities. However... We are in the U.S. If you and I had started a podcast, same exact podcast, say, maybe not from the U.K., that would be a little bit different. But I'm saying an English language podcast, like from Australia or something. Unless we're independently wealthy, first of all, we wouldn't have stars, right? We wouldn't have that kind of thing.
Well, first of all, we'd probably sound like this. Not really. That was terrible.
But it would still be English. But how much could we ever afford to come to the U.S. to do, even if we were invited, which, again, Stars is the American distributor.
No. Do you know how expensive a plane ticket
is?
That's
what I'm trying to say. Australia? So because we happen to be English speakers, although that's not necessarily it, because we happen to be in the U.S. and the show is made by a U.S. company, I feel we've been fortunate in some of the things that we've been able to do. I mean, we paid for our own damn tickets to Scotland, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But we've been able to go to the fan event, which actually had nothing to do with the podcast. That was because of our DirecTV and luck. We got a number or whatever. But my point is... At least as Americans, or at least as people living in the U.S., there's that opportunity. There's a chance. Podcast aside, if you're an American fan or a fan living in America, you have a chance to go to different things, you know? If you're not in the U.S., or in the U.K., which has its own special relationship with production and with people from the show, this is the first time I think anyone is going to Tokyo or Japan. The first time anyone's going to...
I mean, I don't want to go on the record saying that. I don't know what he does in his spare time.
No, I'm not saying him as a tourist. I'm saying as representing the show. We haven't heard of Sam going to Japan before for the show. I'm just saying, and Hulu Japan, I mean, that's where they show the show. That's the distributor.
Well, there has to be an interest. And I think
once they're expanding is what I'm saying.
Yes. But I mean, once the interest is there, then it's just a matter of them wanting it enough to make it happen. Because I think it's a group effort. It's not just, you know, him being available. It's him being available and the people wanting him there. And then the promoters.
Honey, they want him everywhere.
Yes, they do. Anyway, back to the schedule. So after Tokyo, which is March 24th, I believe, he will be headed to Los Angeles, where he and most of the cast and crew, well, not most of the cast, but a lot of the cast and crew, the main ones, I think, will be at an event hosted by Writer's Block. And apparently it is already sold out.
I think that thing sold out. I was told it sold out in under 2 hours. So that LA thing sounds kind of interesting.
Could be.
Well, you can go and read there at their site, which we've linked to, and also Sarah's linked to as well. Yeah, who knows? What's interesting is that Diana will not be there. At least at this moment, she's not listed as being on the panel.
Very true. We'll see. And then New York. So we can extrapolate from all the things we found online that there is going to be a New York premiere because they've been having sweepstakes for it. I don't know if anyone knows the exact date of that premiere that is going to happen, but the 5th of April, which is a Tuesday, there is an event called From Scotland to Paris, a behind-the-scenes journey with Outlander, which is going to include, let's see, the panelists they have listed are Ronald D. Moore, Meryl Davis, Terry Dresbach, John Gary Steele.
I'm so happy Terry will be there. And John Gary Steele. Oh, dude.
And of course, Katrina, Sam, and Tobias. So
again, no Diana.
It is. She's at the top.
No, that's Ronald. I mean, Ron.
Oh, it just says, okay. She's maybe very busy. She is writing a book right now, you know.
That's true. She is writing. And I respect that because we want our book.
I know. So, but this is...
Oh, and Bear McCreary. This freaked me out. Perform his new theme for the second season adventure. So it makes me think, okay, like a whole new like an opening theme, like instead of the song that we all know now, and that new theme, opening theme, or like something, a new Jamie. And no, he won't be messing
it
with
could
ja-
be
he won't be
new...
messing Jamie and Claire
no,
theme.
No, but that was a theme, the Jamie and Claire theme. This could be a new
that one.
Anyway, that doesn't matter. My point is
I mean,
there's,
is that what you mean?
I don't know. I'm just saying I don't remember what it sounds like off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying there was a Jamie and Claire
that was how it sounded, but a lot better.
There was a Jamie and Claire theme. It's not saying a new theme song. It could just be a new theme he has composed for the second season, not necessarily an opening.
It could be a Paris theme or something.
Yeah.
Or a Culloden.
I just don't
theme, whatever.
They technically could change the entire opening sequence. I would hope that they wouldn't. Not the music, at least. I mean, you can update the imagery you're using, but... And I think they should. They should definitely update the imagery to include more of an idea of what's in store for us, you know?
I know.
Court intrigue. There will be a live stream of the discussion for everyone to watch, so that will be good. So even though it's literally only for, like, Emmy members and their guests.
It says for Television Academy members and their guests
only.
But
like I said, it will be live streamed. So even though we all can't be there in person, we can all...
That's pretty cool that you can watch, though. So we'll be able to experience the theme, whatever that is.
So last week, Bear McCreary was on NPR's All Things Considered.
So you can find that link on Bear's Facebook page, on his Twitter, and it was... shared by a lot of people. So I believe that interview or that spot is, you can listen to it now after the fact, obviously.
We also got new tie-in, like series tie-in covers for the paperbacks for Dragonfly and Amber. They also redid the Outlander one. So they used to just have a picture of Jamie and Claire, like
on
their faces, right?
On a horse, I think.
Those of them on a horse? Well, now the new one is them on their way to Craignadoon. It looks like he's taking her back to the Stones. And the new Outlander cover, and they have a new tie-in cover for Dragonfly and Amber, which, to be honest, looks like The Last Supper. And there was an article that came out this last week. I don't remember the day, but talking about Outlander HQ, which is the studio space where that is basically Outlander headquarters, where they have the sound stages and they have all the storage and stuff, and they create things for the filming of Outlander, is being backed to become a Scots film studio by the actually by the Scottish government. So this will be, if this everything goes through, will be something that outlives the series, something that was created to help produce and create the Outlander series will live on in infamy forever.
Hopefully. And if it goes through, they've said that if Outlander is commissioned for a third season, that they'd be welcomed back with open arms.
Also this week, one of Diana Gabaldon's novellas that was previously only available as part of an anthology was released as a separate ebook this week, and that would be her novella entitled Virgins. Is that a Jamie one?
Is
that Jamie and Ian?
Yes. When they're both virgins in France, yeah. Fighting in France.
Technically, Jamie was still a virgin in Outlander, so.
Yeah.
For the first second.
But it's plural, so you need to.
And that is announcements this week.
Okay, one thing, and this is totally getting off topic, and we're not going to say any details about it. And if you're seeing, well, okay, I have a scene in my mind, which I don't want to say because it could potentially give something away. But I will say one scene that I am not only looking forward to, many people, I think almost all fans look forward to this, people who have read all the books or at least the first like three or five. The scene I think I'm most looking forward to, / the scene they better not F up. And that's the only thing, is like, I understand adaptation. I understand it's not the same thing. But this one is so iconic from the whole series. And I'm not going to talk about any details about it. I'm just going to say two words. Printing press. Sorry, print shop.
Yeah, but that's...
I know. I'm not talking about this book. I just mean in general. Is there a scene you can say one or two or three words about, like to identify it so people will know what you're talking about, that you hope, just because I'm throwing this out there, that you hope that, yes, I know you're separating them and it's not the same thing, it's an adaptation, but you're like, oh my gosh, if they get this wrong, I'll go on a strike, but only for like 30 minutes.
What was the name of the giant mountain man?
Huh?
The giant mountain man.
In A Breath of Snow and Ashes?
No.
Drums of Autumn?
Yeah, I think it was Drums. Either that or...
The dude who had a stroke and was there with his wife?
No, the dude who showed up with a giant, like...
Careful, don't spoil.
Hernia. He showed up stinking drunk to the dinner party
and did she did the surgery on the table.
I need that scene.
Okay, you guys, you heard it here first. Summer wants the man with the hernia, with the groinal hernia. And Ginger wants the print shop.
I mean, you took the print shop. That was clearly my number one.
You could have agreed with me.
No, I needed something different.
Okay, hold on. We can go on. I mean, I know we can't go on. Okay. If we're going to...
I would never doubt you.
Good on you. Okay. So then another one, since you... Well, I never would have thought of that one. That was random, but cool. The other one I would say would be from A Breath of Snow and Ashes, the graveyard with a certain girl's dead body and Claire and blue light.
Okay.
I mean, that's like...
I would also, I would counter that with...
I'll be playing...
Any like, scene...
You're opening it up now?
With Lizzie and Lord. The twins.
Oh my gosh. That is so comical. I hope they keep that. It is too comical. It is too sweet. And then, okay, fine. I think it was in... No, Moby, right? Lord John and the eyeball.
Oh, Lord.
They can't do that. I mean...
They put honey in it?
Well, I mean, they can like show that he got injured, but it's not important to have the actual surgery. But anyway,
I feel like Claire's they'll keep it. Do you know why they'll keep it?
Claire's
because it's
BA.
Gross. Because it's gross, and
I
nobody
can't
likes
wait till we see
nobody
who
likes
plays
watching
Lord John.
Nobody likes watching any kind of surgical implements going towards anyone's eyeball. That's why they'll keep it.
Let's go on.
Blarg. All right. Well, we've spoiled enough, and now on to our read along. In keeping with the last episode, we will also be doing two chapters because we are woefully falling behind in our read-along and trying to be caught up by April 9th.
No, we will be caught up. We will be done before April 9th.
I should hope so at the rate you're making me read. So this week...
This is not me making you, girlfriend.
It feels like it. This week, we are discussing chapter 42, entitled Reunions, and chapter 43, entitled Falkirk.
Chapter 42, Reunions.
Meanwhile, back in Edinburgh, Jamie has found out that his men from Lallybroch have been kept in the Tolbooth prison. He bursts into one of Holyrood's palace's drawing rooms, expecting to find the prince, but only finds out that the prince is at Stirling Castle. In the room instead, he finds Ewan Cameron and Simon Fraser. This is young Simon. Cameron tells him he tried to tell the prince it was a mistake to lock up his men. Jamie asks Ewan if he's gone to hang his own men who've deserted by now. So they're having this conversation about, oh, man, this is not fair. And some of you, Jamie basically says to Ewan, well, look, your men have deserted too. Have you gone off to have them hung? So hung or put in prison. The point is, have they been punished? And he's like, I'm not going to give up my men.
Well, but the important distinction between the two is that Jamie was gone. He wasn't there to protect them
and
when they were caught.
Gone, he was gone on the prince's bidding.
This is true, but the biggest point is that he wasn't there. And without him there, they were not granted the protection of their lord.
Now, Cameron urges Jamie to go to the prince at Stirling Castle and see about a pardon for his men. Claire does not think that the prince had intended to execute the men, since he actually needs every man he could get. And that's probably true.
Right.
Young Simon says he'll go with Jamie to Stirling, which surprises Jamie. Now, Summer, this makes me wonder, the entire 2 months or so that Jamie and Claire are at Beaulieu, who's looking after Alex? I mean, we find out who is, like, attending him a little bit, but as far as medically, I guess no one. She's been gone, right?
Yeah, she was gone. It didn't become clear that he was not being tended to by her until she begins tending him again.
Exactly. So, well, you don't think about it.
Well, yeah, out of sight, out of mind.
Simon calls Jamie at one point Nevy. Now, that has to be, like, short for nephew or something, because he is his father's brother. Also, it seems young Simon actually may have a decent head on his shoulders, especially regarding something like Lallybroch. He says, Lallybroch, the estate may be rich, but it's far enough out of the way, and he doesn't want to fight for it. In other words, it's more of a pain than it's worth, at least at this point in time. He's trying to tell Jamie, look, I'll go there, I'll help you out. I understand. Yeah, my father may want Lallybroch, but it's too much trouble for me. It's not interesting me right now. He's tried to tell his father as much as well, but he won't hear anything else. We learn that Dougal is also in Edinburgh. He's apparently Charles' fair-haired boy of the moment. He'd brought 250 men, though others had brought more. So the reason Dougal is the man of the moment is that he had brought £10,000 sterling. Now, even though Diana explains a paragraph or two later through Claire's voice where exactly all of this came from, I mean, that number, if you remember anything from book one, and you've read it a few times, of course, and this is Dougal giving it, you know, smack dab right away, this is straight up Galus's money.
Well, it's a very specific amount.
That's what I mean. And now, Charles had gone through the last of the Spanish money, we find out, and there was very little coming in from English supporters. And then we get the truth. The money, the £10,000, will keep the army in food and weapons for a few more weeks. Weeks. This is expensive.
You know, it is. And you have to imagine the fact that £10,000 now.
I know.
Like today. £10,000 today is worth roughly like almost
$15,000.
Yeah. In that time, that had to be hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, comparatively. And for them to only be able to use that amount of money, that's only going to keep them for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, or weeks anyway.
That's crazy. There weren't that many of them.
Claire says that, this must be why Dougal had visited Paris 2 years ago to visit Charles Stuart. He'd offered him the money and let him know that he could have it if and when he came to Scotland. So if Dougal could speak for Jamie to give him put in a good word to the prince for him to help benefit his men, it would be another good word to the prince. Young Simon had a bit of his father's acumen as well. He suggests that if Dougal still wants Lallybroch, he might be more willing to help him, Jamie, get his men back rather than fighting the Frasers for the land later on. The plan is for young Simon to show Dougal the list of men, including Jamie's men, and for Jamie to come in and say he'll see him in hell before he lets him claim his Lallybroch men. Then they go to Stirling together. Lisa T. writes,
Pieces of the puzzle are beginning to come together as reunions begin, first with Jamie visiting his men at the toll booth, then with his uncle, next with Dougal, and then all with the Bonnie Prince. Now, Claire stayed in Edinburgh while Jamie and his uncles went to Stirling. She had to stay elsewhere, meaning she couldn't stay in the palace anymore. She spent some time visiting the prisoners with Fergus daily. She passed them food and medicine. She finds out from one of the men that they were caught in a large group traveling together rather than going in small clumps. So basically, they still may have been caught, but the person who's telling her this is saying he feels really bad about it because if they had gone, as Jamie had said, trickle out, there's a chance they may not have been found, but they stayed together because people were afraid of getting lost. So he says that there are a few people there, in few of the men are sick, and so he asks for blankets. So in trying to come up with the money to purchase these blankets, she decides to sell Jamie's mother's pearls to help pay for them. She goes to pawn the necklace and runs into Mary Hawkins, of all people.
How many times has she tried to get rid of that necklace?
Like 3 times?
It's like a boomerang.
Wait, right, just now or before this?
Forever. I feel like almost every time she needs money for something, she always tries to use the necklace.
Well, this time she actually got rid of it.
Oh, it comes back. It's like the cat comes back the very next day. She never gets rid of the necklace. It goes, but it always comes back. I'm just saying, it's like a boomerang.
We need someone to track this. I'm sure someone has, because Outlander fans are crazy, yo. And I mean that in a good way, because we're part of that. So she goes to pawn the necklace and runs into Mary Hawkins. We find out Mary Hawkins' aunt lives in Edinburgh, and so she asks her dad if she could go stay with her aunt. She and Mary leave together when she finally is able to sell the necklace.
Do we not think it's funny, though, that her being assaulted abroad made her parents like less protective? They're like,
she's what's already,
gonna happen
like,
now?
Damaged goods now.
They're like, what else can happen to you?
Just go, fine.
They're like, whatever.
She and Mary leave together, chatting about recent goings on. Now, Alex had written to Mary to let her know that he was ill, and Mary had gone to her father to send her to visit to her aunt. This is what I was saying, and she says that she and Alex have been able to spend time together, and they're very happy. But that even with 2 months, it's never long enough. And she's expressing her love for him, etc. And Claire replies, quote, "No, a lifetime isn't enough for that kind of love," unquote. And that's a quote for the whole series. Sorry, Summer just looked at me like I had 3 heads.
No, I feel like I was just moderately deafened by that noise. I hope our listeners were not equally as affected.
Oh, gosh. We find out that Fergus had been saved from imprisonment by virtue of his French citizenship. Go Fergus. She gives Fergus the money she got for the pearls and tells him to take it to Murta, who is to get as many blankets as he can and take them to the Lallybroch man in the toll booth. That was a long and convoluted sentence.
Sure was.
She asked him to take it to him so he could go get this and take it to the other guys, this place. Yeah, okay. Mary and Claire go to visit Alex.
Well, she does that, and then almost immediately they get released. Like, she's like, oh, go get the blankets and take it to the men. They're like, oh, the men were released. It was like, it felt like it was like short order.
Well, that's coming up later. She still does stuff. Mary and Claire go to visit Alex. His room was much cleaner than she had seen it last, and much more nicely furnished, what with Mary pawning her mother's jewelry to help make him comfortable. She examines him and promises to come back the next day with something that will help him sleep. She leaves before nightfall to give the lovebird some time alone, because Mary is supposed to be back at her aunt's by nightfall, so she...
Because again, she's already damaged goods. What else can he do?
Exactly. Lisa T. writes, next, it's time for Claire to have a few reunions of her own. First up, Claire reunites with Fergus and the prisoners. She then pawns her pearls so that she can supply the prisoners with food, medicine, and blankets. She meets her friend Mary Hawkins in the pawn shop. Over the next few days, Claire does her best to recover the weapons that had been taken from the men when they were arrested. She pawned brooches Jared had given her to make sure that the men ate decently. She treated the men as well as she could medically. And she went around to chieftains and lords in the city, to those who might be helpful to Jamie. And she went to see Alex once a day. She came in the morning so as not to use up Mary's precious time with him. Generally, it was just her and Mary who visited, but BJR did appear again. Now, Alex had summoned him to give her, Claire, some news. BJR shares, Holly has succeeded Cope. He's been ordered to march north to recover Stirling. Now, Randall tells Claire the number of troops. Knowing about the numbers of Highland soldiers, she knew the news needed to get to Lord George Murray ASAP. Alex assumes she'll be going to Stirling to share the information, but she doesn't know yet. She leaves Metis with him in any event. When she returns to her room, she finds Myrta handing out the weapons she had gotten back to the Lallybroch men. The men, as Summer said, were released and ordered to join the prince at Stirling. Claire decides to deliver the news to Stirling in person. Lisa T. writes, Claire is still doing everything she can to prevent the slaughter at Culloden.
And that was 42.
As I previously stated, we will also be covering chapter 43, entitled Falkirk. Now, side note, did you ever go to Stirling Castle?
When I lived there.
Yeah, I went previously, not the last trip we were there. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it just wasn't like top of mind when I was there. But like, I'm thinking back now, I'm like, I spent like a whole day in that castle, and it didn't cross my mind once while I was there that, oh, this was the castle. Bonnie Prince Charlie Prince was in this castle. Yeah. It just didn't cross my mind. I think I need to go back, y'all.
So pipers of the clans would take turns to call the dawn at Stirling Castle. Isn't that beautiful?
It depends on what song they're playing.
Yeah, that's true. And then they would repeat that in the evening. Claire spent many an evening watching a man named McKeon playing in the evening. He played pacing with his eyes closed. And we learn the difference as well between the small Irish pipes and the great northern pipes, which McKeon played. Lisa T. writes, this chapter is filled with reverse parallels and foreshadowing. The chapter opens, quote, I could feel the men close by, all around me in the dark. There was a piper walking next to me. I could hear the creak of the bag under his arm and see the outline of the drones poking out behind. They moved as he walked, so that he seemed to be carrying a small, feebly struggling animal, unquote. Claire's description of the piper with his pipes seeming to, quote, carry a small, feebly struggling animal, unquote, struck me as a metaphor for the destruction of the Highland army. The pipes should be filled with majesty and not feeble. This sets the tone for the chapter. One night after he finishes, the piper, Claire walks back through the gate with him. She asks him why he plays with his eyes closed, and he says his grandsire taught him to play, and he had been blind. We find out he comes from the Shetlands. Lisa T. writes, from this exchange, we are reminded yet again that Claire is an outlander, that this is not her time or place. Claire had shared her news, and Cameron's spies had reported Holly's moves as well, so the Highland army was out to meet them, somewhere south of the castle. Jamie had stopped asking her to stay back. She was part of the army's physicians. As they are out, we find out they had been seen. Jamie asks Claire to ride to a church or a kirk up the hill and wait for him or Myrta to come get her. He says if things should go wrong, to go into the kirk and claim sanctuary. Lisa T. writes, Claire is beginning to realize just how close she is to the battle lines. She has never been so close. There is danger all around her. We experienced the danger through her. From her placement at the church, she could see the English fires in the dark and also hear the pipes. Claire goes into the church to escape the weather. She pulls her horse in with her. She hears various sounds, including a Tulachard. They were coming in her direction. Men are crashing into the church, trying to escape or hide. The first one is Willie Coulter, then a few more. The men begin to say their names aloud in the dark, that they can tell who is there. Dougal, Geordie and his brother, Gordon MacLeod of Ardsmuir, Ewan Cameron of Kinnoch, and Rupert, who's been injured. Lisa T. writes, we also learn that Rupert has been wounded. The scene with Rupert is a parallel to the scene in Outlander when Geordie is wounded by a boar during the hunt and Dougal gives him a quick death. The scene with Rupert is deeply poignant. His death shatters everyone. To the reader, it's a wake-up call. The shit just got real. Over the course of the last two books, we have come to love Rupert.
I'm sorry, did you just say shit?
I did.
Okay.
She even said in parentheses, you can choose another word. And I'm like, I thought, no, I'm just going to delete it. I'll just say it.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you, girl.
I'm going to get you a shirt that says, I just said shit on my podcast.
I just said shit.
I just said shit.
Then Claire announces herself when she says it's her horse there. She asks Rupert to speak so she could find him in the dark. She could tell from the bubbling sound of his cough that he was badly injured. As she reaches out to find him, Diana writes, quote, patting him blindly in what I hoped was a reassuring spot. I supposed it was, because he gave a sort of gasping chuckle and arched his hips, pressing my hand down hard against him, unquote.
Even a mortally wounded Rupert likes to
get Claire's jollies on him. His jollies from Claire.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure she gave him jollies, not the other way around.
Do that again, Les, and I'll forget all about the musket ball, he says. Lisa T. writes, even in death, Rupert's earthy sense of humor remains. She feels over Rupert to assess his injuries. He'd been hit by a ball which entered him and had punctured at least one lung, she finds. His chest was filling up with blood, and only surgery would save him, and it was not the type that she could do.
Well, not only that, but she's in a very dark church that they're not allowed to have lights on. She doesn't have any kind of, like, surgical instruments with her. It's not clean. Like, if she had to cut him open in this kind of environment, he was going to die anyway.
Duo comes over to try and talk to Claire and find out more about Rupert's condition. He goes to look for her medicine box. There are the sounds of two cracks. Jamie calls for Claire. He has come for her. He enters through the window. I love it. Jamie's like, oh, and once again, Jamie in the window to, well, even though she's not being held by BJR, it's still kind of a Jamie in the window to rescue her.
Well, she's kind of being held captive by the British still.
Well, like,
the reason she can't leave the church is because of the British.
So Jamie in the window.
And he couldn't come in through the front door, and there's no back door.
Okay, so we have two parallels here that no one else pointed out, but I just realized, hello. There are about 20 soldiers, British soldiers, at the foot of the hill below, Jamie tells them. They're discussing possible ways to exit the church with the English outside when their attention returns to Rupert, who is not doing well. Dougal attends to him. Knowing he was likely not long for this world, Rupert said he'd like to see Dougal's face one last time. They lit some thatch, which she used to examine him, while some of the men got a piece of wood from the roof to use as a torch. Dougal looked to Claire for an answer. The same question he'd put to her when Geordie had been wounded during the boar hunt, but this time Rupert answered for her. He tells Dougal not to grieve him, and Dougal tells him, look, I'm your laird. I'm the one who's given orders. If I want to grieve for you, I will. He says, not Rupert. Rupert asks him to take his life before the English get to him. Quote, this dying hurts me, Dougal, and I would have it over, unquote. How awful would it be to hear that, one of your friends? I mean, obviously, without the English outside, I just mean, you're stuck somewhere where you can't go anywhere. Your friend can't. You don't have anybody to help you. Doesn't matter the year. It could be today or tomorrow.
I got your back, Ginger.
Let me get this straight. Are you telling me that if I were mortally wounded,
I wouldn't let you suffer?
You would kill me?
I would, if we could not get you anywhere. And we were stuck in a church surrounded by British people, and there was nothing that was going to save you.
I'm not talking about a church, Summer. That's in Diana Gabaldon's universe. I'm saying you're out in the middle. You and I go for a hike someday. I don't know. And I fall and I hurt myself. And I mean, your cell phone's dead. It's not going to happen. And I obviously have like blood coming out.
Ginger, if you asked me,
you would do it?
Probably.
Oh, I don't know if I could do it for you.
Because you're mean. You're horrible.
I'm not mean.
You'd let me, like, bleed out and die slowly and watch. I would, like, I'm clearly the kinder of the two of us. It doesn't seem like it from the way you're laughing at me. But clearly, I'm thinking about more than myself. Because that's all about you. If I'm begging you to kill me because it hurts and you don't, it's because of you, not because of me.
But I didn't hurt you.
I'm not saying you did. I'm not saying finish the job you started. I'm saying...
Now, if I started the job, I would finish it.
Nah.
But, Stop. Okay, Rupert's dying, Summer.
The only thing I have to say about that is that I am going to weep when the scene, if they have this scene. Reading the book originally, I was like, oh, that's too bad. Rupert's Rupert.
But now that you like
but
the
now
actor,
that it's like, but it's like Grant. And,
it's Grant.
I mean, I felt bad for Geordie.
And we had two episodes. And we never met Geordie.
No, that was the only introduction and goodbye.
Rupert further asks Claire to hold his hand as he leaves this world. He tells Jamie that Claire should have married him when she'd had the chance. And, quote, gear a good one for me, lad, unquote. Oh, to Claire, he says, goodbye, Bonnie Lassie. Dougal's dirk takes him under the breastbone. Afterwards, Jamie takes Dougal by the shoulders and turns him away from the body and speaks to him in Gaelic. They then turned to Claire, and she took him in her arms, both of them holding him as they crouched on the floor as he wept. I think the whole time in the church is going to be difficult, but especially with that. Lisa T. writes, Claire, Jamie, and Dougal have lost a beloved family member and friend. They could not prevent his death, even knowing what they knew. They were helpless to stop it, and they are still in mortal danger themselves. The English didn't come that night. The Scots slept fitfully. Claire in between Jamie and Dougal. At first light, the English make their presence known. They order the Scots to surrender. Jamie fires at the door, scaring the English enough to slip back down the hill. Claire is thinking how surely the Highland Army would be sending out troops to check for wounded from the night before, and then they could be found and saved from the English before a cannon could be brought in. Now, I love this line. Diana writes, quote, Unfortunately, there was a thinker outside, unquote. They are given 1 minute to give themselves up or the English will set fire to the thatch. Claire shouts in her proper English accent, No! Bloody bastards! This is a church! Have you never heard of sanctuary? And of course, that was in no accent whatsoever.
And why did you roll the R?
I think I was trying to set it up to do it. I just didn't do it. The voices outside ask if there is an Englishwoman inside. Without any hesitation, Dougal shouts, Yes! Dougal tells Jamie his plan. If they give Claire up in exchange for their safety, it'll work. The English would not harm Claire. And the Scots, or their little tribe, their little troop, will be able to get Claire back later. And after they're free. And Claire agrees. Jamie's the one who's most reluctant, but he finally agrees. He says to tell them they took her from Falkirk Road late the day before. Jamie tells her perhaps it's better to pretend to be shocked and she can't speak of it. That way she won't have to tell lies because he knows all about her glass face. If the English find out who she is, it's likely London and the Tower and execution for her. He tells Claire, as they believe she'll be taken to Callender House to, quote, try to be alone near a window just after nightfall, unquote. He's so specific. I want you to be at this house. Now get yourself next to a window right when night is falling and I'll come find you. Jamie carries her out and she has pretended to swoon. This way there are fewer questions, at least initially. And he leaves her at the feet of the English. Lisa T. writes, The chapter ends with a bit of foreshadowing, but also the recurring theme of Claire being separated from Jamie that has run throughout the entire book. Quote, I could feel the trembling in his arms as he carried me. After the stuffiness of the church, with its smells of sweat, blood, black powder, and horse manure, the cold, fresh air of early morning took my breath away, and I huddled against him, shivering. His hands tightened under my knees and shoulders, hard as a promise. He would never let me go.
Except for those times you let her go.
Except where he left her with the English just now.
This wouldn't be the first time.
No.
Won't be the last time.
So basically, that's 42 and 43. Did you have any extra thoughts about that? Not to like take it into the series thing, the TV series, but I agree with what you said. I think that church scene or the Rupert death scene will be very touching.
I think they should film the Rupert death scene entirely in black.
Black and white?
No, just black. Black screen. In the dark? Completely in the dark until they light the flare and he says he wants to see Dougal's face one more time. They won't. But I'm just saying that would be effective.
It would be very effective.
Hey, it's like them not giving us subtitles for Gaelic. It's giving us the world of Claire from her point of view. Just saying. They won't do it. Mostly saying it tongue in cheek, but yeah, they should totally do that. It's too late. They've already filmed it. But that's true.
They're not going to go back just for you, sorry.
Though, to be honest, the easiest kind of an edit you could do is to just
filming in black. Oh, make it black.
Make it black screen.
That's true.
Just turn the light off.
So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, Audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.